Hello, Gemini, and welcome to Eye of the Centaur, your 2024 spring reading from Planet Waves. I'm Eric Francis Coppolino, your friendly neighborhood astrologer here, reporting to you on a warm late winter evening in the Mid-Hudson Valley of New York State. It's about 5:21 p.m. Just think, 1 week from now, exactly at this time, it'll be 6:21 p.m. And I have got an astrology reading for you. Now, as I was prepping, I was thinking it would be funny to do a kind of imagine an astrologer in the role of a pharmacist or doctor saying, Gemini, it's time to talk honestly about dualism. Dualism, not, well, I guess, you know, Hamilton and the other guy, but you probably have read a couple of spiritual books here and there, right? And you're thinking, will these people stop going on and on and on about dualism? Haven't we had enough about dualism? Why is that the explanation for everything? Oh, it must be dualism. Oh, it can't be. It's Earth. It must be dualism. It's kind of sliding up. It must be dualism. Well, it turns out there's a brain hemisphere thing. That's why I wear headbands a lot. It's to hold the hemispheres of my brain together, which is my secret to thinking with my whole brain. And I've been reading a lot about this in a book that it's going to take me like another month to get through it, because I read that slowly. Where this is the origins of consciousness and the breakdown of the bicameral mind. So it's a book about the origins of consciousness, which it's always been a topic that's fascinated me, and it's central to Gemini. And it's about the two hemispheres of the brain. This one that's supposedly all mystical and likes pictures and reads tarot cards and communicates telepathically with kitty cats. And then there's this one that's all about logic, mathematics. You might say that has something to do with my investigative reporting portfolio, which is a very left brain activity. The thing with investigative reporting is it depends upon intuition a bit, not totally, but ultimately you have to follow your intuition. You can't write in the story, oh, my intuition said that's what's going on. You can say, my intuition said that's what's going on, and it said to talk to Father Damien, the campus priest, and it turns out he's got something important. Then you verify that, then you print that. You can leave out the whole story about Father Damien. There was really a Father Damien at SUNY New Paltz, and he really did help me on the PCB story. He knew something that the rest of the administration knew it wasn't saying. So there is a relationship between the intuitive and the cognitive, and that relationship is contained in the sign Gemini. And we as a society like to think that we're completely overheated on the cognitive side, but that's not true. We are totally overheated on the mystical tribal side, which is being jammed in every direction with all of these gadgets and stuff, tribal thinking and internet blotto stuff. And so we're completely overwhelmed on the intuitive to the point where there kind of is no such thing anymore. And that in turn is overwhelming the more individuated other side, the left hemisphere, which is supposed to be able to say things. I am Eric F. Coppolino. I live at, my zip code is, and so forth and so on. I am 451 feet above sea level and so forth. All of that is cognitive rational, but it gets blown away by all of this tribal, electrified bullshit mysticism that we are constantly confronted with. Why am I going on about this? Well, happy news for you. There's a very important planet coming to your sign. Part of why it's so important is it hasn't been in your sign, unless we count a couple of months last year, for 11,400 years. What I read in my bicameral mind book, which is kind of a history of the world, kind of part zero, is that about 11,000 years ago, humans were first settling into communities that were large enough that you didn't know everybody in the community. That's very interesting, because that very topic is covered by Gemini. Gemini is the sign of community. The third house is the house of community, the neighborhood, which is sufficiently small that you know some people and maybe even many people, but it's sufficiently large that you don't know everyone. And Gemini also covers this matter of the dualism of the two people inside of us, the left person and the right person, with the twins. Who are those twins? Now, there is not a Gemini alive who vaguely understands the concept of Gemini just a little who hasn't thought, wait, who are those twins? I know who they are, et cetera, et cetera. What's your story of who the twins are? This would make a fantastic article. Let's consecrate that concept now. For you, Gemini, we've got a captive audience of Gemini. Who are the twins in you? What are their names? What are their personalities? What do they do? I live with a Gemini who's like carpenter. What was he? Carpenter who wore the utility kilt by day. He was like the groovy West Coast carpenter, and then like biker at night. There's always some options. So dualism runs as a theme throughout the zodiac. You can see a lot of the themes have dualism built right in. So for example, there's two waves in Aquarius. There's two fish in Pisces. So it doesn't look like fish. That Cancer looks like two fish, like a yin yang, but there's two fish in Pisces. The horns of the ram, there's two of them if you haven't ever counted them. The horns of the bull, there's two, if you haven't ever counted them. And then you're like, well, yeah, so there's like dualism everywhere. But one of the jokes of the zodiac is that, you know, it starts in Aries and there's like a ram. And now rams are cool. I mean, who doesn't love rams? And then you get to Taurus and there's a bull or a cow. Who doesn't love bulls or cows? But it's so far, we've gone 2 months into the zodiacal year and there's no people. And when their people first appear, there's two of them. There's twins. I consider that an astrological joke. That is a joke left to us. It's an observation. It's funny because it's true, left to us by the ancient Sumerian, Babylonian, Greek, Eudoxus of Knidos, or whoever, the Atlanteans, whoever you think, if you're a Barbara Hannah Clough fan. All we know about astrology, you know, well, she says that, and so does Alice A. Bailey, that all we know about astrology comes from the Atlanteans. But whoever it was left us a little joke that when you first get to a person, there's two of them, and that would have something to do with you. So now in my 30-second reading, in 3 months, less, I did, you know, most of the writing on, well, whatever, the written portion of the book portion of Somewhere in Between, followed by the audio portion of Somewhere in Between, throw a couple of birthday readings in, and now 10 of these readings, I keep reading Sedna in Gemini over and over and over again. You might think it would get boring, but it's not. And it's especially not boring when I started to put together, from reading my old friend Julian Jaynes, who McLuhan couldn't stand this book, but it sheds a lot of light on McLuhan. He too was concerned about the hemispheres of the brain and the hemispheric relationship, and it elaborates on the concepts there. And one of the things that McLuhan said that I think is one of the most profound and useful things that that McLuhan said, let me turn the lights down here a little bit. He said that all war, that's warmer, all war is between the hemispheres of the brain. When people are slugging it out, slamming it out, the Crips and the Bloods, the Hatfields and the McCoys, Mr. Smith and Mrs. Smith up on the third floor, people are actually projecting conflict inside of themselves out into the world, and war becomes the story of an inner split. And to learn about that inner split in astrology, we study the dualism of all the signs, but we really, really, really study Gemini. So Gemini is a central location of the study of consciousness, which is what astrology is. And for you, it is something central to your self-concept. I personally think people relate to their zodiac signs a lot more than they say they do, and certainly poses interesting question. And all Geminis know that they're Geminis, and all Geminis have a theory about what it means to be Gemini. I bet not so many Pisces or, well, I'm a Taurus. I have Venus in Taurus. I have all unique handmade cups. La-di-da. But Gemini's like, ooh, who are those people? Is it me and my sister, me and my boyfriend? Is it the lovers? Is it the sisters? Is it the brothers? What's going on here? Well, we're going to find out something about Gemini. We're going to find out something about Sedna very soon. And I think it's going to be interesting. So Sedna orbits our sun. It's not an exoplanet, unlike that other sun, like, you know, Proxima Centauri or Alcyone. That's exactly where they are, actually. Rather, Sedna orbits our little sun in our little solar system. It's just that it's far out in, it's kind of on the edge. It's on the edge of the Kuiper Belt and on the, therefore on the edge of the scattered disk. And the scattered disk is very large. The scattered disk is a band of space around the sun that goes out halfway to the next star. That's 2 light years. That's pretty damn far. And a lot of stuff's getting trapped between, you know, like imagine our scattered disk and Proxima Centauri scattered disk are probably exchanging objects, and conceivably something could be a member of the scattered disk of Proxima Centauri start to enter the Kuiper Belt of Earth and then be pulled in like a centaur. Chiron is a visitor from the Kuiper Belt, right? And so we're talking about a way out there influence, and it moves so slowly that the last time it was here was the fucking dawn of civilization. And I don't mean where there's like clay tablets. I mean where you gotta fight, you gotta read the bones, you've got to be a paleontologist. There's no decrypting Lascaux paintings. This shit is like, they left back in those days, they kind of like left grandpa propped up against the back of the cave, held up by rocks, and then they still continue to hear his voice. This is the era we're talking about. And we're talking about hunter-gatherers coming in off the savannah and off the prairie. It's a fucking long time ago. And we are in a time when this other thing that is absolutely central to the study of Gemini, the nature of consciousness. Very important issue now, probably the single most important issue right now. So Sedna slips in. It's going to be there till 2066. And then no sooner does that happen than Jupiter enters your sign and enlarges it. Jupiter magnifies shit. It also brings things closer because Jupiter is close to us. You think, how close could it be? It's orbiting 12 years. That's pretty close, right? There's Mars. You could throw a rock at Mars. In fact, Mars throws rocks at us all the time. Something like 2 tons of Mars rocks land on the Earth every year. That's what I said. Where are they? I want one. And then there's the asteroids. They're like in a 4-year orbit. Then there's Jupiter. Well, that's pretty damn close. And Jupiter is 1,200 times the size of the Earth. You are going to make a discovery about yourself. You could be the most boring person who is only taking a 5-minute break from flipping through the channels, cable channels, there's like 5,000 of them, to watch this video. You will make a discovery about yourself on what on whatever level that happens. And the discovery, in my thinking, is likely to come in the form of a flash of experience about seeing the world with your whole mind, as opposed to one half, then the other half, then one half, then the other half. And you don't necessarily remember what that half said yesterday, what that half said this morning, but Sedna is here to help you, in the words of Julian Jaynes, originate consciousness and break down the bicameral mind and create a kind of a conscious, mutual, reflecting mirror. This is great stuff. Also, and this is a fun reading because I'm getting to read the air signs. Whenever I'm faced with like a lot of these readings, Gemini is a go-to because it's easy to talk in words to and about Gemini. So this is reading number 11. I'm glad it's Gemini. Now, here's one of the reasons why I'm glad. There's a lot going on in the air signs besides Sedna entering Gemini and Jupiter. In fact, Pluto, one of the defining moments of this time in your life and of other times in your life, is Pluto entering Aquarius. I'm seeing a mistake in this chart. That's not a square. That's a trine. That was me imitating Truman Capote. That's not writing. That's typing. That sums up 95% of Substack. That's not a square. That's a trine. Here is Pluto early in Aquarius. It was here. See all those wavy lines? That was me describing all the disturbances in your life and all the changes in what you thought were the most solid relationships have kind of been kind of vaporized and dust settled, I think, maybe by now. And Pluto moved on. And where Pluto moved on to was here. Not big enough. Pluto moved on to here. And here is house number 9. And house number 9, almost everything about the ninth place, originally the house of the church and the clergy, it becomes the house of higher education, the higher courts, right? K-12 is in a different house, like probably the sixth. The higher courts, the lower courts are in the seventh house. But you go to the Supreme Court, you're in the ninth house. The big libraries, ninth house. Travel abroad, ninth house. Higher self, quote unquote, ninth house. I call that inner teacher. It's inside. It's not up any higher anywhere. It's right in you. Ninth house. Your relationship to God, whatever you think God is, ninth house. So the ninth is the house of widely expanded potential and access to things that you have to aspire to get them. It's unlikely that you live in just randomly live in an apartment adjacent to the SUNY Buffalo Library. I personally want to go visit the SUNY Buffalo Library sometime soon to visit the University Archives on the fourth floor. I have to drive 400 miles to get there. That's the ninth house. There's the library. It's physical. I want to go there. I've got to get there. And I've got to make an appointment before I go in. That's the ninth house. And I'm going to an institution of higher education. That's the ninth house. But the ninth house also represents your sense of what the universe is really about. What is the nature of this universe? So, you know, you talk to a new ager and they're like, well, we're reincarnated from the Atlanteans, and then you go traveling with them, and they're like, "Wow, a lot of people really died here. I can just feel it." Certain maybe Capricorn types, for them, the world is a world of artifacts, but they want physical artifacts. Religion may be a more formal, structured thing for a lot of people. For you, your notion of God and the cosmos is a social concept. And so there's the beauty of the solar house system, and why it works so well is because when we're talking about one sign, think, okay, one sign, for instance, Gemini. You could describe one sign. You can say, well, Gemini has these properties, and then there's twins, and then, one is Pebbles and one is Bam Bam, but they're not really twins. But to understand Gemini, it helps to understand what the Gemini concept of spirituality is. And you find that by going nine places around. You want to find out about Gemini's concept of relationships and elaborate riff on it, like writing a poem. Well, you talk about how Gemini likes determined, broad-minded, spiritually conscious, cultured people. Did I get that right? Is that true? Gemini, concept of contracts, formal and structured. That's the eighth house. Concept of career. It must be something you like to do, want to do, and believe in above all else. So what the solar chart is doing is, let's make an awesome video series. Kind of is one already. Heck, I'm in a video series right now. Is you understand every one of the houses, i.e. signs. The signs are the named things, but the house is the relationship to you. So we say, well, there's Gemini here, four places away. That's Virgo. Well, what does Virgo, four places away from Gemini, say about Gemini? So Gemini is known to be social. It's inherently social. There's two twins there. Brothers, lovers, sisters, whatever they might be. Neighbors, kissing cousins. But when we find out the spiritual nature of Gemini, what the concept of holy is, the concept of holy is society itself, is people relating to each other, doing something, and you can probably see the spiritual aspect in any aspect of human interaction. As a kind of honorary Gemini, I've never said that before, as a kind of honorary Gemini, I am in love with marketplaces as a spawning ground for true human nature. I fell in love with marketplaces living in Paris. It's a great place to fall in love with marketplaces. They certainly have plenty of them. And the city cooperates, and Wednesday night, all the poles and tents arrive, and then 3 o'clock in the morning on Thursday, somebody puts them all up, and then boom, there's a market in your community, and lots of people walking around, and lots of stuff from all over the world that you can have for some money. Well, this is inherently social. I used to walk around those places thinking, this is the apotheosis of civilization. I can get nutmeg from Afghanistan here, and this wild boar from the French countryside, all right in like a one block area. Or any form of social order and organization, or any notion of the bunch of us, you don't need to look any further to define spiritual reality for yourself. And this is very important right now because it with Pluto arriving here, where'd it go? Pluto arriving here, see, doesn't that mean a lot? It's a trine, not a square. It's writing, not typing. Means that this is being activated for you. It means that you are being called to leadership. It means, in a way, that you are being singled out to be a bit of a heretic, to risk rejection by the tribe in very, very, very tribal paranoid times that we're in. Motherfucking tribal paranoid times where people think, oh, if I say one wrong word, I'm going to lose my career. That's a sad career. You are being called to be a bit of a heretic and to take leadership. Very important. And you have the option to heed the calling to do this. That's ninth. Tenth. Now, the tenth for Gemini also, see, highly activated, right? And right now here we've got Mercury is there today. Let's draw that in. Nessus is there. Nessus is actually, let's put Mercury here. So Mercury is there. Did I draw another Chiron? That's wrong. I meant to draw. It's getting late. Another Mercury. Mercury is there. The Sun is there. Saturn's there. A lot going on in Pisces. The 10th place is where you take the ideas of the 11th, of the 9th place, the concepts of what does it mean to be a good person? What does it mean to be spiritual? What is it? What is my guiding philosophy in life? What is my inner teacher saying? And you go the next house over and you take action in that house. The subsequent house is always the field of action of the preceding house. So to give an example, the seventh house is the house of relationships, marital partners and enemies and friends and business, not friends, business partners, dyadic partnerships generally. But the eighth is where we consummate them contractually or sexually, for example. So the next house is always the field of action of the previous house. And it's a fun exercise to think about this. This is why studying the houses is the single most important thing you can do. If you want to take the express train to learning how to read a chart, learn the houses. I've got great material about the houses, and I will add the houses to the resource area for this project. Read that article, learn the houses, talk to a couple of other people studying astrology. You will become an astrologer efficiently. The 10th is the house of action. It's also the house of reputation. It's the house of what you do based on what you believe. It also describes the way in which you want to relate to your public life, meaning the life of what you're known for, because of what you do. Now, a lot of astrologers would say the 10th has nothing to do with action. The 10th is just what you want to be known for. Well, yeah, maybe. But when you go back to the ancient Greek and you go back to the core concept of the 10th, which is the Greek word praxis, that means you do stuff. The work of the 10th house is you do stuff that earns your reputation. You do the footwork. You hang up the flyers. You make up the resume. You knock on doors. You get rejected a million times. You keep on going, knowing that the nature of the world is based on action gets results. But the kind of action you want is gentle, persistent action. It's Pisces, so it's gentle and it's persistent and it's patient action. And with Saturn doing you a big favor by being in Pisces right now, you have the ability to focus on priorities rather than being overwhelmed by possibilities, which was very annoying with Neptune moving through Pisces without the help of Saturn all these years. And we got some respite with Chiron moving through. That ended in 2018. So since 2018, it's not been that easy to focus on what you want, even to know what you want. It seems like life makes a lot of its decisions for you. But Saturn arriving is saying, okay, time to clean up all these goals. I want to do what I want to be known for. I want to be known for what I actually do. And you've got help right now, not for much longer, another year with Saturn in your 10th house. It is one of the very, very best possible positions for Saturn is in the 10th house. So this is the time to focus specific career goals and to dispense with all that you don't want or need to do. All right. One more house to cover. On the theme, remember a minute ago I was ranting about how when you want to know a sign, plot the solar chart out, start with the sign in the first place, and then see what's in the second. No, you know the theme's the second. Oh, that's got the theme. That's colored by the sign Cancer. That's the third. That's colored by the sign Leo in your chart. That's the fourth. That's covered by the sign Virgo. Well, we come back to Aries. In the 11th, 11th being social, inherently social, we find out that you identify as social above all else. Now you're social because there's another kid there. You're social because your idea of religion is what anything people do together is potentially spiritual activity. And in a house that somewhat corresponds to Aquarius, but it's the 11th house, not sign, we have the sign of self-actualization right there on the 11th, which means that you so identify with self-discovery through social activity that it becomes the place where you just naturally seek and find yourself. And you have Chiron there right now, which is a handy utility to have in an age of social collapse and chaos. I mean, between dating apps and, you know, Prozac and COVID, society's social dimension has been decimated, which is why I'm not hiding the fact that I think you are going to be one of the natural inherent social leaders. Much of Somewhere in Between is about your kind of ministerial role, ministering to the social needs of society, and the party should always be at your house, or your friend, some friendly other Gemini with a bigger house. And it's handy because you are extremely comfortable and natural in social situations. The question is, what is this eclipse in Aries about? What is this transformation that is going to happen? And remember, I don't think I've shown this map. This, all of this here, leave out Neptune for a second. All of this from little Binor down here, that's a centaur. Venus, North Node, Moon, Sun, Chiron, all together. Look at this. 19, 19, 24, 24, 24. It's fucking impossible. Plus Eris. If Eris wasn't enough, we have Mercury retrograding. There's the little RX. It's covered up by several things. That's Amor. Ooh, Amor is exactly conjuncted. That means something, I'll tell you. Mercury in questioning mode, inner questing mode, about to make a conjunction to Eris, the goddess of chaos, is saying, look for your internal whole-seeking properties, the thing going on in you that is a tropism toward wholeness. I've got, someone sent me a fabulous plant that I always walk right up to and say, hello. It's these beautiful flowers, and the flowers are reaching across the room. I should just move the whole table closer to the window. It's not that far away, but it's called phototropism. My cactus, which is upstairs, I washed it off last night. It too leans over a little bit. Well, it must have been left on the windowsill for a while, and it leaned toward the sun. That's called phototropism. And what retrograde Mercury conjunct Eris is the tropism of holism, wholeness. Now, interestingly, I haven't said this yet. This is the 11th reading in the series. There's an asteroid there, right conjunct it. It's called Amor, A-M-O-R. It kind of looks like a pussy. I think that actually is what it's supposed to be. That's the official glyph, at least according to Martha Westcott. And that is the conditions on unconditional love. So when we add that to retrograde Mercury, we start to get conjunct Eris. We get a story about all of the conditions placed on unconditional love by digital and electrical conditions. We all take for granted that I'm sitting in a room with an electric microphone, an electric computer, another electric microphone, an electric light right there. Oh, an electric soundboard. Ooh, an electric camera. Oh, if that's not enough, how about an electric piano? We've got it all. The fuck? What's all this electricity? Well, the story of Eris and Ares is about the continuing effects of electricity. New shit. Electricity was, most places didn't have streetlights in 1905. That's just over 100 years ago. We were in the dark. We were lighting candles. So the impact of electricity is new, and it has completely changed us. But what's going on is that this total solar eclipse conjunct Chiron plus retrograde Mercury conjunct Eris is saying we must be like plants growing toward the sun in growing toward our wholeness. Brain lobes connected. Social, spiritual instincts activated by Pluto. Self-actuation, self-actualization, itself activated in group environments. This is great astrology for you. This is absolutely, absolutely fantastic astrology. You must mind P's and Q's where the government is concerned. Deal with them on their terms, which does not mean knuckle under to them. Should you have any matters of governmental affairs, be impeccable. Be firm. Damn people, they're just people. And they have been known to back down when they are proven wrong. But not until. So you gotta have your shit together and embody Saturn, but really the action is in you're 11. Now I forgot a whole house. Like, we can't forget a whole house. I don't care how long this is going on for. And since it's Gemini, I'm being extra verbose. Right after the eclipse and right before Sedna and Jupiter go into Gemini, there's another major event. It is in your 12th place. That is a hidden dimension. To the 12th place is everything I'm not thinking about going on that wall behind me, which is the home of the LGBTQ center, where there's absolutely nothing for me to do there. How could this be? They should just cross out the B. The 12th house is anything that is concealed from current perception. The dream you had this morning, the stuff hidden in your underwear drawer, stuff lingering on disk drives in the other room, the songs you haven't written yet. That's all going on in the 12th house and a bunch of ancestors. And additionally, because you have Taurus there, this is a very sexual place for you. Taurus is a sexual sign. Listen, don't fall for their prim and proper Emily Post bullshit. These people wear the most beautiful clothes that they can't wait to take off. And you have that property in your 12th, one of the very most sexual signs, the house of the pleasures of the bed, according to the Vedic astrology, who, despite the kind of casty stuff going on, no pun intended on astrology, and the inherently oppressive nature of the caste system and all that stuff, there's some important stuff in Jyotish astrology. And one of the ones that I learned from Callie Halverson, may she rest in peace, is that the 12th is the house of the pleasures of the bed. And if that's your thing, you're in luck, because there is about to be this massive conjunction of the biggest planet and the most radical planet, that radical planet being Uranus, the planet of revolutions, just 12 days after the total solar eclipse. They line up, I think 22. It's big news. And it's in your very private, carry around all the time, don't admit it, house with Taurus, And what I suggest you do is stay close to your imagination. Don't let anyone con you out of things like, he's cute. Just for fun. This is not sexist. This is not offensive. Ooh, she's a hot one. Very nice. Have fun with this. In other words, the secret of the 12th, I'll tell you, I've concealed this. I'm coming up on my 30th anniversary of buying, where did that thing go? It's here. This book. 30 years ago, I bought this book. This book. This physical book on March 10th, 1994. But I've kept this secret. The secret of the 12th house is don't keep secrets from yourself. Be real with yourself. You've got a lot going on there, and there are very few aspects you can say, that is a fantastic aspect, because there's always like a yeah, but with astrology. Ah, that would be, that's fantastic, but you hardly have that with Jupiter conjunct Uranus in Taurus. In the 12th, it could be, like it could be feeling like a lot of pressure, but the pressure is relieved by opening up the valves, like in the Rocky Horror Picture Show. The 12th is relieved by writing down your dreams. The 12th is relieved by, if you feel like taking a hit of weed and putting on Dark Side of the Moon, then take a hit of weed and put on Dark Side of the Moon. Let yourself trip out a little bit. Let your imagination go. Let your imagination be as naughty as it wants to be, because you have a lot going in there. I mean, go on the internet, you're already on the internet, and look up Jupiter. It's 1,200 times the size of the Earth, with something like 50 natural satellites. Gee, you could live there. Uranus is about 600 or 800 times the size of the Earth, with a bunch of natural satellites, but it is emitting power that topples emperors. Nixon, if you like looking at historic astrology, just check Nixon's transits in the year before he was the only president to quit. Nixon had a bunch of planets in Capricorn, and Uranus was in Libra, and it made one square after the next to all of his planets, and Woodward Bernstein typing away, and then Nixon was gone. Suddenly, he was just sitting in his house in California, Sacramento, California, with an aide. They gave him an aide, and he would come to work every morning and sit at his desk and pretend to be president. Uranus erased Richard Nixon. Uranus topples emperors and empires. Uranus is associated with inventions. Uranus is about exciting transformational experiences that you're not expecting. Where did that come from? Look for Uranus. When you see Uranus, expect the unexpected. But the unexpected is happening in you, where the 12th house is. It's not really in those disk drives in the other room. It's contained in you. And so the release point of the 12th house is you be real with yourself and feel your feelings. And that, finally, is all I have to say, except what I say in some other sign. And we are now down to Taurus. I've worked the wheel in reverse for this group. That means you start in Aries, and you go Aries, Pisces, Capricorn, Sagittarius, Scorpio, and go backwards. And so I've threaded the wheel backwards. And now we are only left with Taurus. I love you. Thank you for being my customer. Please be a subscriber. It helps a lot to keep paying the bills when these readings are not around, and give you good shit. And it's going to be a very exciting few months of astrology. So keep your eye and your ear on Planet Waves, and I'll have lots of good stuff for you. Thank you. Good night. Signing off at 6.05 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on a warm Pisces evening here in the Mid-Hudson Valley of New York State. Bye for now.